Blog Talk Radio.
Positive, uplifting, and helpful. Welcome to the show where you'll get informational and inspirational ideas on how to unleash your potential, get what you want in life, and shine like you're meant to.
Hello and welcome. I'm your host, Angela Loeb. Thanks for tuning in. Today, I'm joined by a special guest, Carolyn Scarborough. We're going to talk today about reconnecting to your creative heartbeat. Carolyn is going to show us how to remove blocks to what she calls your innate creative heartbeat, and she's going to tell us about the role of the body in amping up our creativity. So before the discussion begins, I want to tell you about Carolyn and what she does. In a nutshell, she's a professional coach, author, and creative spiritual mentor. And what she does is pretty amazing. She clears the path back to your creative core and what matters most. And she does this deep, intuitive listening. She dissolves blocks and reconnects people to their authentic voice and purpose. She's a professionally trained coach and has practiced Zen and how it connects with presence and creativity for more than 25 years. She's the author of Backyard Pearls, Cultivating Wisdom and Joy in Everyday Life, and has published more than 500 articles in publications around the world. She leads writing retreats. I've been to one of her retreats, and it was awesome. I was just reflecting about it this morning about how awesome that retreat was. She also started the Creative Soul Community in Austin, which is where we live in our hometown, Austin, Texas. That includes creative women's circles, small writing groups, teleclasses, and individual coaching that is focused on finding your way home and expressing from there. I'm so excited she's able to come today and talk with me about creativity and connecting to your creative heartbeat. So let's get started and welcome to her to the program. Hi, Carolyn. Welcome.
Hi, I'm so excited to be here.
Yeah, it's so good to have you. It's been a long time coming. I know we've been back and forth talking about this for a while, and I feel so fortunate that we can make it happen. And creativity, it is such a huge topic. It's very important to me personally, but I know a lot of people will love this topic. And I'm just happy to hear any wisdom you have on the subject. And to be honest, my first question, it's going to be a big one. It's pretty broad. So you just answer however you want to. I just want to soak up whatever you have to say. I know you have tons of experience with this, but what do you think are the most common ways? What are the most common things that people get stuck about when they're creatively stuck? What challenges are they facing?
Well, that's a great question, and there's a lot of ways, but maybe I'll start, with the people that I've coached, maybe the top three things that I see or three ways that they get stuck. So the first one is a lot of people I coach, and I coach a lot of women. I also coach men, but I would say it's predominantly women, and we tend to put others first. In our lives, you know, we tend to think that our creative life is the thing that happens at the end of the day. It's the thing that happens after we've taken care of the kids, after we've been a good spouse, or after we've done our work, after we've dusted the cobwebs from the corner of the ceiling, like everything else. And then, you know, if somehow we've had a good day, a productive day, then we get the reward of some creative time. And what ends up happening, of course, is we never get through that whole list, so then we never get the reward, and we don't have that creative time. But the irony is that really that creative life is the thing that needs to come first. We see it as the reward at the end of the day rather than really what it is, which is the fuel that powers our day. Mm-hmm. So if we start and take time for ourselves and our creativity, then it fills us up. We get nourished, we get fed, we get heard, and then all of that overflows into everything else, into our relationships, into our kids, into our work, into everything else. So we kind of
I would
have
say
the
that's
whole
definitely,
paradigm
I definitely
upside
felt,
down.
Yeah, I definitely felt that way. When I went to your retreat, that was one of the big ahas I walked away from, because I went back and looked at my notes, because this is 2-3 years ago. And I remember the big aha I had was I was not putting my creativity first. And getting away and having that block of a day to really nurture and just steep myself in my creativity was so amazing that I vowed I would block time on every Saturday to do that. And do you know, it's become such a habit all these years later. I can't imagine not doing it. It's like, what was I ever thinking, you know, that I would ever have done something otherwise? So thank you for that, Carolyn. I'm just going to thank you right now, publicly.
Yeah.
I appreciate you. You helped unblock that for me, too.
That you have followed through. That's very impressive. And that's so true, that it's an ongoing thing. It's not just a one-time, we've had this great creative day, and now we go back to our lives. It's just like you don't dance or exercise once or brush your teeth once. It's ongoing, ideally. That's how we want it to be integrated.
Exactly. Now, you said there were three things. What would number two be? What would be the second big creative block that people have?
Yeah. So the second thing is, and it's kind of aligned to this first one, it's that we don't take the time or space for our creative lives. And we just become so busy and following these routines and structures and habits of mind, and we get on this treadmill. And, you know, we're probably all familiar with the poet Mary Oliver and her quote, "Are you breathing just a little and calling it a life?" And we start getting into this life that is breathing just a little, and we don't even realize it. Like a part of our creativity has withered, but we think that's normal. And it's like when you go to get a massage, you know, and you think you're doing okay, but you need a massage. And then after the massage, your body feels so good, and you hadn't even realized how you felt beforehand. You hadn't even realized the depth to which you really needed it. And when women come in the retreats or the circles or, you know, wherever, they, you know, they're drawn to it, but they really, until they're there, they don't understand the depth to which they need it and that they need to make space. And there's a great quote I love by Ram Dass. He says, "Creativity springs from the yearning to be the fullness of who you are." So it's like part of us knows we really want to be our fullness in our day-to-day lives, but yet we're just rushing through and missing things.
Yeah. So putting others first and not taking the time or space for our creative lives, those are the main two. And you, what's the third one that you'd say people are challenged with?
And the third one is just believing our inner critics. You know, we tell ourselves with creativity and doing something, we're not good enough, we're not fast enough, we have to enjoy the process, we have to not enjoy the process. We have all of these shoulds, and it's so easy to get blended and believe what our mind is telling us. And the essence of who we are is truly creative, and all of these thoughts are just that thing that blocks our knowing of it in the moment.
Yeah. So I guess you can guess, you'll guess what my next question is. Like, what should you do about it? I mean, what do you think? Because these are blocks that we obviously have that we are putting on our way. You know, it's not like anybody else is putting these in our way. We are. So what do you recommend that we do so we can kind of get back into that? I love that innate creative heartbeat, that metaphor you've come up with. It's beautiful. So how do we get back to hearing that?
Yeah. Well, so going back to the space, one of the biggest things is just creating space. And people think that it has to be a huge amount of space. They need to carve out half a day or an hour or whatever. And I think it's starting really small. You start with 5 minutes and you pause. So pausing is the essential piece of it. And there's there's a quote, and it's attributed to various different people, so I'm not sure exactly who said it, but it's the silence between the notes that makes the music. So we have to pause and have that silence, right? And one thing that I like to do is you have to start with connecting to yourself. So if you can take 5 minutes and just sit down and ask yourself how you're feeling at that moment and what you're needing, and you can journal it or you can just think it, because you have to start with the connection with yourself before you can go anywhere else creatively. So it's just take 5 minutes, pause, like, you know, just welcome yourself in. We're so busy running around that we don't, you know, we have these beautiful beings and this beautiful inner life that we just don't slow down enough to say, hey, how are you? What's going on? I'm listening.
Yeah, so I remember that something you did in the retreat that I just remembered when you started saying that, you said dear, you said to, you know, like you called that inner creative person a dear. So it's, how are you doing, dear? You know, or how are you doing, sweetheart? I remember you doing something like that. So that must go back to what you're talking about. How are you feeling? And treating that preciously, I guess. More precious than what we tend to do.
Yeah. Yeah, because part of the practice is building this compassionate relationship with ourselves. It's not the judgmental relationship, and that's the thing. That's why you do it on an ongoing basis, why it's not a one-time thing. It's how do you build in this compassion.
Well, what do you think? I mean, you say start with 5 minutes, so do you pause and just 5 minutes check in? Do you recommend that a person do this kind of daily, or is there a particular prescription you have for this? I guess is what I'm getting at.
Yeah, well, let me give you an example this morning for me. So this morning I was just not in a great space, feeling kind of crummy, and so I went out on the back patio, I sat down, and I did those two questions, and I started journaling. How am I feeling? What do I need? So all of these feelings came up, and, you know, this picture of a snapping turtle came up, that I felt like a snapping turtle, you know, just kind of angry and snapping and grinchy. So as I started connecting with myself and offering myself compassion, I started settling down, and all of a sudden, I started noticing the sound of the water fountain. I looked out and I noticed that there were these glass sculptures, and I noticed how the sun was hitting it and this beautiful red. And in Buddhism, there's a term, it's called caught in the self-centered dream. So that's where we just look in, and that's the only place we look, and it's all about us, and all of us can easily get there. But when we tune in, check in with ourselves, then something opens and we start noticing everything else. So as I sat there, I started noticing the breeze and everything else, and that's when my creativity started bubbling up. I mean, I didn't have to reach for it, but by releasing everything around it and by touching base with myself, it started to rise.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah, that's really good.
Yeah. So, what about the inner critic, though? What do you? Because that's the big one. I think I fortunately worked on that a long time ago, and I don't think you ever necessarily completely silence the inner critic, is my opinion, or maybe that's just me. I don't know, but I just know that that's a big one for most people. And I work with clients around mostly their career, and you have to create something. When you're looking for your next job, or you're trying to create a business or anything like that, it's a creative process. And I encounter people's inner critic all the time as a coach. So I know you must see this a lot with people you work with. So what advice do you have around the inner critic work?
Well, that's great. That's exactly true what you say when you say it never goes away, because that's true. I mean, people think they're failures if they haven't gotten rid of their inner critic, and what you learn to do is be in relationship with your inner critic And, you know, the old feel the fear and do it anyway. And one thing that's really helpful for me is when I notice my inner critic start to go off, first of all, I just kind of pause when I get aware and conscious enough, and I turn towards it. It's as simple as that. I turn towards it. So maybe I'm feeling like what I'm writing isn't good enough. So there's that voice. It's not good enough. And so instead of being that voice and blending with that voice, like I imagine in my imagination, just my body turning slightly and compassionately looking at that voice and talking to that voice. Oh, you're not feeling good enough. I understand. That's hard, isn't it? So it's like offering compassion for all the inner parts of ourselves, because we're made up of so many different parts. So it's whatever is arising, I turn towards with compassion rather than banishing it, rather than beating it, rather than doing anything like that.
That's really good. And then what do you do? I mean, can you do you find it that the inner critic subsides, or is it just you want to? Because there's something I read one time, and it was Carolyn Mice, who's well trained in Jungian archetypes and that kind of work, and she was talking about the one of the archetypes, like the saboteur, being kind of like that inner critic, you know. And but what lesson does it teach us? What can we learn from this? You know, what can we learn from the saboteur? What if it's pointing out something that perhaps you want to learn about yourself, or to overcome a fear that you might have, or whatever. So I thought that was kind of interesting, and I've tried to play around with it, but it's kind of challenging to do. It's kind of subtle work. And you're making me think of this when you talk about compassion. How can you have compassion for something that doesn't sound so nice? You know, when you're hearing it criticize you, it's not a very nice voice. So it's hard to have compassion for it.
Yeah. So for me, I mean, you're right. We do have things to learn from the different parts of us. And if you imagine, like, let's say the part that says, you know, you're not good enough. You shouldn't publish this. You're not good enough. Well, that part of us is really trying to protect us, because these are all little parts of our ego, and it doesn't want us to get hurt. So the intention is good. So that's why I have compassion for it, because it's working so hard to protect me. And I feel compassion for this part that's working so hard. And, you know, an analogy that I use is driving a school bus. So you have all these parts, and it's like if that part is driving the bus, then it's going to be veering all around. It's going to be, you know, going into a ditch and staying there. You don't want that part driving the bus or kind of your whole psyche. You want the part that's calm and clear and compassionate, you know, your essence, your soul, to be driving the bus. So when that part comes up, you can say, I really want to fully hear you. And maybe you're in the middle of writing. Maybe you're writing a book or whatever, and that part comes up. I really want to hear you, but now is not the time. Can you go back and sit in your seat, and we'll have a conversation later? And so then later I might have a dialogue with that part and say, what is it that you're afraid of? What is it that you're needing? And I reassure that part that I'm here, that the adult, the essence is here and doing fine, and it doesn't have to worry.
That's really good advice. I like that. And it's very, you can kind of imagine that when you give it an analogy like the driving the school bus, you can kind of visualize it and take, you know, it goes out of the realm of being too subtle to understand, but to something that we can actually imagine ourselves doing. Okay, now go sit down in that seat right there, and we'll drive where we're going to go drive to, and then when we park, we'll get out, and we'll have a conversation. I kind of like that. That's very clever. So, okay, well, before we run out of time, I really want to address this really cool thing you've talked about when we were setting this all up to talk today about amping up your creativity and the role of your body in doing this. So talk to me about that a little bit, because I know you have some theories around how the body plays a part in all of this. So very fascinating. Tell me more.
Yeah. So I want to read a quote that I love by Lorraine Herring that I think really captures it well. And she says, and I'm going to use the term writers in this quote, but really it's any kind of creative. She says, mm-hmm. often writers tend to live in their heads with their bodies as convenient vehicles for transporting those heads. If we spend all our time in our heads, not only do we have to deal with all those messy thoughts spinning around, but we'll soon find ourselves seeking solutions to all our problems and navigating our lives through only one vehicle, the mind. The mind is not meant for all that work. The mind is a gigantic data processor and can only work with the data it has in it. So creative solutions must come from outside the mind.
Interesting.
So,
who were you quoting from again?
It's an author Lorraine, L-A-R-A-I-N-E, Herring, H-E-R-R-I-N-G, and she's written several books about writing and creativity.
Cool.
But she says, okay. if we spend all our time in our heads, so the thing is, we have to get present. To tap into creativity, it has to be about presence. That's because our thinking, 97% of our thoughts are recycled. They're the same thoughts going over and over and over again. So if you sit down to create and you get in this recycled pool, nothing original is going to come up. So you have to tap into the body, which helps make you present, in order to get outside of that loop and get into creativity. So, for instance, when I dance, some of my best writing comes when I dance, and I'm sure, you know, a lot of people have experienced this, you know, or running or, you know, whatever it is, but I dance and my mind quiets down, and all of a sudden, just I get first lines of blogs, and I get, you know, new paradigms. All this stuff starts coming up because I'm in my body, and I'm present, and I'm grounded, and I'm not spinning around, you know, with all the critics in my head.
Okay. No, that makes sense. And the walking is the thing for me. So I totally do much better if I've walked. And call me Henry David Thoreau, where he used to walk and do his creative, like walking meditations, and then he would go back and write. So brilliantly. I wish I could be like him. But, yeah, so awesome.
Yeah,
that's really good.
That makes total sense. Yeah, and that gets you into that space too. But another way of doing it, so let's say you're sitting down and you're writing, right, and you've been writing for half an hour, and now your back is aching or your foot is aching, and your mind is going to want to keep pushing ahead. But if you slow down and tune into your body, it'll say, hey, my back is aching. So then you get up and stretch, and then it expands the resources that are available to you. So it's like in the act of creating, if you have an active conversation with your body, then it's not the mind running the whole show, but it's more integrated and deeper and richer.
If we want to take the whole data processing analogy a little further, it'd be kind of like restarting the computer. You know, you have to go walk away and, you know, come back to it, and you've kind of go through a restart process, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
I know my computer always runs better when I restart it. So I think I like that analogy.
Exactly.
That makes sense. So in your program, when you're doing work with people, whether one-on-one or in a group, how are you using this? Are you using this to help them unlock their creative, you know, side and reconnect to their heartbeat on that? Is there something you're doing?
You mean, am I using the body?
Yeah.
What's your question? Yeah, am I using the Bible?
Well, I mean, how are you doing this in your workshops and your programs? Do you have people dance, or do you have them do, like, walking, or is there something you're having them do?
Yes. I always, at the beginning, we do check in writing, kind of like that 5 minutes. So, you know, I have people check in and notice their body sensations, notice where it's tight, where it's hot, where it's cool. We do sensory walks in the retreats and sometimes in the circles, but especially in the retreats where people walk around, calm their mind down, tune into the senses.
Mm-hmm.
Tune into the noises and the noises between the noises. And, you know, so there's lots of different subtle ways. Usually it's not like let's get up and dance, but it's more tuning into our sensory experience and our internal and external sensations and experiences.
That's good. Yeah, that's good. Well, I remember you did a sensory walk with us when we did the retreat, and that was pretty amazing. First of all, I love how it got you, you know, kind of present rather than in your head. You're now out of your head because you're paying attention to the surroundings, you know,
mm-hmm.
using your five senses. So that was really good, but wasn't thinking about how important that was from a body perspective. And no, that does totally make sense. But if I was coming to one of your programs, since I'm not into dancing, I'm glad to hear you're not doing that. Because I'm like,
no,
I don't think you're going to get me. I'm not
thing.
Into that kind of thing. Yeah. So, but walking,
no,
yeah.
And a lot
like
of a lot of writers and creatives aren't. And so I always start with where people are, not where I am with anything.
Yeah. No, that totally makes sense. Well, before you know it, I mean, this half an hour has gone by so quickly, and it's time to start wrapping up. But I did want to let everybody know that I've added your website, carolynscarborough.com, to the program page. So, and I know you have a newsletter, right, that people can sign up for, and you have upcoming events posted on your site, too. So I want to encourage everybody to go check that out. And see what Carolyn offers. I've really made it easy for you, so you can just click on it and go to her site. And I personally endorse, you might even see my picture on her site, if you still have it up there, because I've endorsed your writing retreat. I think it is fabulous. And everybody, what Carolyn does is the real deal. It works, what she does. It does unlock your creative heartbeat. And so is there anything else you want to add before we close today? One of the things I like to ask people is if there's one kind of thing that you want people to take away, you know, one golden gem that you wish that people would hear and listen to and, like, take away, what would it be?
Yeah, well, two things. First of all, I just want to quickly say if anybody does want to connect, that I have the Creative Soul Women's Circles, which are kind of like mini retreats on an ongoing basis. I do small writing circles, you know, the writing retreats. But if you're wanting the next step, those are some options. But I think that the main thing is just slow down, take a breath, give yourself some space, some opening, and connect with your beautiful self, because he or she is so thirsty for that. And once you start doing that, it's just like giving water to a plant and everything blossoms. And we need to do that regularly. So,
oh, I love that. That's really good. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes, I second that. That's awesome. Well, thanks, Carolyn. I really appreciate your being here today. And that just takes us to the end of the program today. And thank you, dear listeners, for tuning in. Until next time, please remember to take heed to what she says, slow down, take a breath, reconnect to your beautiful self, and keep shining like you're meant to.